power, and transcendence. Only by making such inquiries in this world can one be successful and perfectly cognizant. For such inquiries invoke transcendental ecstatic love onto the personality of Godhead, who is the proprietor of all the universes, and guarantees 100% immunity from the dreadful repetition of birth and death. So, this is a very nice discussion dealing with the different types of knowledge. Everyone in the material world wants to be cognizant. This is the very nature of the soul. We all want to be cognizant. Cognizance is generally seen as, of course, consciousness. Everybody is trying to expand consciousness. The whole material world is an attempt to expand consciousness. Consciousness is there in all different types of bodies. In every different types of living entity, there is some consciousness. And within that particular body, there is a limited exhibition of consciousness. That's why we see that this is called struggle for existence. The actual struggle for existence is the conditional state of consciousness. All of these different types of bodies are simply different material conditions, which actually have nothing to do with consciousness. You see, actually matter has nothing to do with consciousness. That's why if you separate consciousness from matter, matter becomes totally useless. It has no more significance. You see, the idea of the materialist is that consciousness is somehow manifested through matter, by matter, by a combination of some material, some chemical, molecular or whatever you want to call it. They feel that by some sort of physical interaction, it produces consciousness. But the proof of that is that they've never actually produced consciousness. We have no example. Prabhupada gives an example that even a mosquito, which is a very tiny body, it doesn't take a lot to really put together a mosquito. But at the same time, the beauty of the mosquito is its consciousness. It has the conscious ability to actually land, and it performs so many wonderful activities. But the business is the same, of course, getting blood. So the thing is that the scientists have never actually been able to prove that consciousness, how it is produced. Actually, they don't even get involved with consciousness. They don't even get involved. Because to them, consciousness is an area that they know absolutely nothing about. Because consciousness cannot be approached by material perception. Anyone who has a little intelligence can understand that the senses are material, and therefore they can only approach actually gross objects. When it comes to subtle objects such as air, ether, mind, intelligence, ego, they have no actual, they have no actual way of measuring. There's no way of measuring subtlety. You can acknowledge subtlety, that it exists, only when it's manifested through gross matter. In other words, when something, when the air is blowing through your body or through a forest or some leaves are scattered or some plastic bag or whatever is flying around, then you can understand that the air is there. But in actuality, in this room now, can you see the air? But air is there also, just as much as in a hurricane or a wind or anything. So the thing is that therefore our sensory perception has to be understood to be extremely limited, very, very limited. And because of that, the living entity is always searching for knowledge. Of course, knowledge in the material world is relative knowledge. It's related to the particular type of body you have. So if you've got a hog body, then you're going to be looking for objects which stimulate pleasure in the senses, which may be in the form of stool, and female hog, or something like that, or you may have some children. But you can see how very, very limited the different types of bodies are, because each type of body is a limited restriction on consciousness. So therefore, the human form of life, because it's the highest development of consciousness, it naturally invokes this tendency. It naturally invokes this tendency to search after higher knowledge. In other words, that we want to be cognizant. We want to be cognizant of our predicament, our environment. We want to know further. We want to know how to manipulate that environment so as to bring about the highest types of pleasure, the most succulent types of pleasure, which are available within our jurisdiction. So therefore, the whole misdirection of consciousness in the material world is in the form of, materialistic advancement. Of course, in Shastra, it's giving us dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Artha, kama. Actually, kama is the predominance of the material world. All the different types of bodies are based upon kama. Kama means sense gratification. And the human form of life, because it's such a wonderful development, that it allows the living entity to search after artha, which is economic development. Artha, and of course dharma. Dharma is economic development in a higher plane. You see, what we call this, that's why Krishna says, sarva dharma prachaja. Because all that the so-called religiosity is that when we fail to be able to create a situation within the material environment which can bring about lasting happiness or even a possibility of satisfying our senses, we then try to project that onto a higher plane and hope that when we achieve that higher plane, all of those things which we couldn't adjust with our consciousness down here will be automatically adjusted up there. Doesn't matter who adjusts them, really. We put the name God because God is probably going to do a better job than we are. But actually, most people, they're not really worried if God is up there when they get there. What they're worried about is the environment, the conditions, the type of sense gratification that is going to be available on that higher plane. So therefore, Because the living entity is more intelligent in the human form of life, that's why it says atata brahma jignasya. Tata means now there is the possibility. There is the possibility of searching out Brahman, of understanding God. Brahman means actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the human form of life is a wonderful opportunity. But at the same time, when actually people do search out God, they tend to bring with them the uselessness of this material world to that higher plane. Just like Prabhupada gives example, if you took a hog to heaven, he'd still look for stool. He'd still want to chase after little female piggies. And he'd still want little children. And the example was Indra when he became cursed to become a hog by Brihaspati. Actually, he didn't want to go back to the heavenly planets because he couldn't bring his children with him and his wife. So even though he's Indra, the Lord of Heaven, he could not adjust to that idea of leaving his predicament or his environment. So the thing is that the natural conditional state of the living entity causes him to actually try to project onto the transcendental plane the same type of thing that's going on here, which is actually exploitation. That's all it is. What are you searching? So all of these things, dharma, artha, kama, moksha, are simply, if you like, the search for perfect cognizance. It is the search for perfect cognizance. That's the word. And then what is the word used here? Akila. The word here, kila, kila loka nata. Kila loka nata, the Lord is known as, he is known as the, Sri Rasa Murti Akila Ashraya, that he gives, he is the all-embracing. Kila means all-embracing. That the Lord is capable of completely embracing all living entities into his transcendental Rasa Lila. And therefore, here it says, only by making such inquiries in this world can one be successful and perfectly cognizant. For such inquiries invoke transcendental ecstatic love onto the personality of God, who is the proprietor of all the universes and guarantees 100% immunity from the dreadful repetition of birth and death. So the thing is that these inquiries that are made in Krishna consciousness, this actual inquiries by the sages, the search for transcendental knowledge, is in order to understand the transcendental nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But in order to do that, one has to give up all of his other, what do you call it, mental speculations or contaminations which is required in his sojourn in the material world. That's why Krishna says, sarva dhammam prityaja. You see, Krishna is directly saying, sarva means all. You see? Now, when Krishna says, sarva dhamma means that if you have any thing that you're carrying in your mental or in your intellectual storage house, because generally the material world naturally, if you like, pushes us to try to extract from the material world various types of mental speculations. Our whole body is made up of speculation. The physical gross body is manifested from the subtle. Our environment is created from the subtle. So according to our particular activities and our speculations in our past life, we have come to this stage in our journey. And therefore, the whole Vedic literature is, that's why it says, tadviri paripatena paripashena sevaya. You see, these are very important words. Paripashena. Prabhupada uses the word that when we come to Krishna consciousness, we have to become like a blackboard for the spiritual master. We have to give up all of our intellectual ideas, all of our mental speculations, all of our preconceived ideas. We have to throw away all of that rubbish in order to enter in to actually understanding Krishna. Because Krishna refuses to allow you to bring your dirty laundry into his rasa. You see, you cannot bring your dirty laundry with you if you want to approach Krishna in Vrindavan. So the very nature is that we want to bring along with us all of those things that we've acquired, just as much as the hog would like to bring the stool with him to heaven. You see? Because naturally when he gets there, there might not be any. So he's a bit worried in that sense. So in the same way, when we approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we naturally want to bring along, or we want to actually shoot him with our bullets of limitations, our bullets of what do you call it, the limited concepts. So therefore, as soon as we look at Krishna, we machine gun him. Because immediately we want to put all sorts of designations, attributes, and so-called ideas, and we want to try and squeeze him into our little brain box. We want to push him in there somehow. He doesn't fit, but we want to, you know, just, it's like if you're trying to put into a small little bag a huge amount of clothes. You know, you're trying to push it in this end, it comes out the other. You try and turn it over, squeeze it, tie it, whatever you want. But if the quantity of clothes is unlimited, then you've got a real problem. Because everything you're putting in is a total waste of time. So therefore, all that Krishna is really asking us is paripashena, sevaya. That we should come to the spiritual master free from all types of speculations. Jnana, karma jnana, we should give up all types of karmic activities and jnanic activities. And that is very scientific because the soul is covered by gross and subtle energies. So much as we have to give up the gross energy, we also have to give up the subtle energy. We have to detach ourselves from this coils or these wrappers, just like if you have a sweet and it's inside two types of wrappers. Usually they keep sweets inside two types of wrappers. So first you take out the sweet of one wrapper, but again there's another one. So you still haven't got at the juicy sweet to bite it. You still, it looks like you have because the wrapper's on the floor. But actually another wrapper has appeared, so you have to take away that other wrapper also. And that other wrapper is the subtle body of the mind. We have to get rid of the mind, false ego. So the first detachment in the material world is that we have to get rid of our physical dependency upon the material world. In other words, we have to detach ourselves from the dictations of the material objects, which have constantly engaged us birth after birth for millions of births. And secondly, we have to get rid of all of our mental and intellectual gymnastics that we've been performing for thousands and hundreds and thousands of years. And these are the most difficult things to get rid of, because the general tendency is that we can sometimes easily renounce the gross matter because it's caused us so much pain and misery. So we tend to say, yeah, well, I can figure that out. Actually, this sort of material life is not very, has never given me very much happiness. It's not very stimulating. But to give up the subtlety of the material world is much more difficult, because we still want to make some adjustments. So naturally, we tend to depend upon a subtle adjustment, because the gross is created from the subtle, and tendency is to rely upon that. But here, these sages are giving us the actual formula for entering into the deepest, most confidential aspect of understanding God. And it's as simple as one thing: hearing. Doesn't require anything else. It's so simple that it's to hear. All we have to do is hear. We don't have to add anything, subtract anything. We don't have to even necessarily understand things. It's not even required to understand, just like the Maha Mantra. We don't understand the Maha Mantra. And neither will you ever understand the Maha Mantra. But you can feel the effects. You see? You can feel the effects. So therefore, just as any other subtle science, we have to actually look at the effects. So just like if you're chanting Hare Krishna, you automatically see that the gross things become, they fall away, isn't it? They're falling away. All of these things which kept us very, very busy throughout our entire life are actually falling away, one after another. We don't watch any more television or listen to radio, chase after discotheques or clubs, intoxication, gambling. We don't even want to gossip with our family anymore. We don't even get the idea of going and sitting down and gossiping about Aunt Fanny or George or Uncle this or Bert or what happened to old Uncle Peter when he fell off his horse, or any, you know, all of those things which actually completely absorb people in the ocean of material nectar. Those things which actually infatuate the mind and keep people busy. Things which actually absorb their entire 24 hours of the day become as insignificant as a little drop of water in a puddle of a calf's foot, a hoofprint. Samasritaye parapalava palavam mahapatam punya yasho marari. When one takes shelter of Marari Krishna, then all of this material world becomes reduced to the small water that's in the hoofprint of a calf. So therefore, we see the power of simply engaging ourselves in the transcendental process of hearing. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya said, Harinam, 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 Iva Kevalam, Paloha Nasteva, 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 Gatya, and that in this age, there is no need of any other formula. We don't need any other thing. We should not even dream of using these very limited things of the material world to approach the transcendental autocrat, the transcendental Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is forever inviting us to associate in his rasa dance in Vrindavan. You see, Krishna is always inviting the fallen little souls to come back to him, to come back to Godhead. And in this age, because we are completely devoid of any qualifications at all, 100% devoid, therefore he's saying, just listen. And he's so earnest about this request that he comes personally to tell us. You see? How much important this instruction is. And therefore, when Lord Chaitanya came, one of the most important slokas that he quoted was Harinam, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalova Nasteva, Nasteva, Nasteva. That thing. And one should chant the holy names of the Lord. One should chant the holy names of the Lord. One should chant the holy names. No other way, no other way, no other way. Not by jnana, not by intellectual knowledge, not by any material karmic activities, not by any type of adjustments, can you become cognizant of Krishna. In this age, only by chanting the holy names can you become cognizant. So therefore, if we're serious and sincere about this cognizance, then all we have to do is chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And listen to Srimad Bhagavatam. Listen to the holy name, listen to Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. Listen to the great sages, Sukadeva Goswami, Suta Goswami, Maitreya Muni, Vyas. All just listen to them. And we're definitely 100% guaranteed that we will go back to home, back to God in this lifetime. If there's any questions at all, because we have to stop.
When you say listening, does that mean personal reading as well?
Yes, definitely. Satatam ketayantamam. Personal. I don't know if it's impersonal, isn't it? It's kind of impersonal. Personal. Everything's personal. So if someone else is reading, that's also personal. If we're reading, that's also personal. So we should have lots of personal reading. No impersonal.
You mentioned that. Maybe because we're coming to Krishna consciousness and the stress, we may be able to more easily give up the gross bodily attachments.
Yeah.
So, is it just a question of time and by chanting and hearing that we gradually lose? I was thinking particularly about the motivated religion, the search for cognizance, and how when people get tired of adjusting the gross awareness, they try for a higher level into religion. So how would that maybe be present when we try to become Krishna consciousness?
Would that same aspiration be there?
Yeah, but
see, the thing is that you cannot take aspiration away from the soul, because the soul at the moment is disconnected with Krishna. So the soul is always aspiring for that reconnection. That's its eternal pursuit, the search for truth, the search for the absolute truth. So that truth, that search, has at the moment become misdirected. That's all. So we just have to redirect it. We should become very eager to enter into Vrindavan. We should become very eager to enter into Vrindavan. Very eager, very serious, and we should study it very scientifically. We should not treat it as some casual kind of flippantly sort of, like that. But the thing is that we must not bring with us those things that we've acquired here to that transcendental abode. In other words, we must not destroy the Bhagavatam by the limitations of our mind, trying to somehow or other reduce the knowledge of the Bhagavad. Because that's the tendency, is to try to fit God in rather than you fit in. So you want to fit God in. Whereas the business of Krishna consciousness is, how are you going to fit in? Not how is God going to fit into your head, but how are you going to fit into God's transcendental abode? So therefore, that preparation to fit in, that is what Krishna consciousness is all about. We are trying to bring Chaitanya Dharma and Majan. We are trying to cleanse the dirty things. Krishna consciousness is a cleansing process. It doesn't require anything else but cleaning. Just like Prabhupada gives the example, walking is a natural propensity. It doesn't require any apparatus. The child naturally can walk. It just requires a little bit of practice. So that practice, in our sense, is just a matter of cleaning the dust which has accumulated from millions of lifetimes. We have to clean this dust very thoroughly so as that the actual consciousness can properly shine, and that that consciousness is there in everyone. But at the moment, it's eclipsed on account of the association with subtle and gross matter. So that cleansing process is not some sort of rejection. We're not to reject anything in the sense of renounce the world. But what we have to do is to link everything with Krishna out of love. So therefore, the real ingredient, if you like, the ticket to go back to Godhead is how much love we develop for Krishna. And love comes from the heart. It doesn't come from intellect. It actually comes from the heart. So therefore, it's not that you can't pursue love with the intellect, but actually the love itself comes from the heart of the living entity. And therefore, full manifestation of absolute cognizance is found in the relationship between Krishna and the gopi. That's why Lord Chaitanya said this is the highest example of transcendental knowledge, the activities between Krishna and the gopis. Okay, I think we'll finish. One last question.
You know how if we're in, if we've had miseries, and then we can easily go up the material situation for more easily.
What?
You know, sometimes people have such amazing karma, but they haven't got so much misery. So why would they be convinced on the Krishna consciousness?
Well, the thing is that misery is not necessarily the only. There are four types of people, Krishna explains in Gita, that come to him. Those who are in distress, those who are in want, in search of money or want, those who are inquisitive, those who are inquisitive, and those who are in search of knowledge. So, all are in want of something. Everybody, anyone who comes to God comes in want. But the thing is, the lower level is on account of distress. The actual higher level is in search of knowledge, in search of God. So generally people who are more wealthy, in the sense that wealth doesn't necessarily mean money, it means they've got a higher material kind of birth. They're generally more attracted to philosophy, higher things. But unfortunately what's happened now in society is that same intelligent person is so much caught up in manipulating the material world through the form of economic development, that dharma is not there at all. Any type of dharma is not there. Simply, you know, there's nothing there at all. So, therefore, unfortunately, that whole intelligence is misdirected. That's why Prabhupada always just say it is simply a misdirected civilization. Completely misdirected. So we have to redirect. Those same intelligent people can become very good devotees. Jai Srimad Bhagavatam Aparadam Ki Jai.